Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Yeah, that's wild flower. Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Ooh, we got lots to talk about. So there's lots happening. We did talk about the tomatoes. Can I mention with the tomatoes? Look, if you've got tomatoes that are big enough, you feel like you're big enough and bold enough to put them outside, and that's okay. That's okay. But here's the thing: protect them from the cold winds, because there's going to be at least one day where it may not be freezing, but you're going to get these bad winds. They're going to come in from the northwest. Not bad winds, but they're cold winds. They're going to come in from the northwest. It's inevitable in spring, and those can really set a tomato back. Even temperatures around 40 degrees can set a tomato back, particularly if it's accompanied by those cold winds. So think about some way to create a little buffer to protect them from that wind, at least early on, while they're young and little babies. You know, it could be a sheet. If you've got a tomato cage, you can just tie a sheet around the backside to sort of protect that northwest, you know, the wind coming from the northwest. That's one way of doing it. And the other thing I would do is just be prepared. What I said last week, and I will reiterate it again this week, as climate continues to warm, and it seems like it's determined to do that, I mean, we've seen it happen. As we get these earlier springs, what that means is that things are going to be a little bit unstable. They're going to be more unstable than they used to be during spring. So even though we're getting earlier, it seems to be generally warmer earlier, there's going to be a greater chance of an outbreak of cold weather in the middle of this spring warm-up. So what I've said, and look, it's a fact of life. It's something we're going to have to think about and deal with. And so as gardeners, we've got to be smart. It's more important now for us to think about how we're going to protect tomatoes from these cold outbreaks. And then we can adjust to this new, you know, we'll do our best to adjust to the new normal. We still need to plant early as we can. We may have to plant even earlier because if the spring warm-up occurs early, the chances are that summer could be even trickier. So we got to beat summer. So be prepared to protect them. A wall of water is a very good thing. At least have it around. Have something, a cardboard box or some way to cover that tomato in case we do get a late cold outbreak. I don't see one on the horizon. I don't see it happening. But we could end up with something freaky this year. I mean, the forecast is only carrying us, even the most iffy forecasts are only carrying us in about the second week of March at best. So we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we've had frost in late March before. We had a snow in April. These things can happen. So you've got to be prepared. And the earlier spring comes, the more you have to be prepared for something freaky to happen. Because freaky begets freaky. There it is. Hey, Dan. So you're asking me, Dan's asking me, what about the other seedlings? I would go ahead right now. I would certainly plant my cosmos. I'd certainly sow the cosmos. And cosmos don't like our super hot, wet midsummer conditions. They're going to look great in April and May. The earlier you can get those ready to go and in the ground, the better off you are. You know, I've sown them in the ground. I've sown them. I don't know which is best. If you got plenty of seeds, you can try sowing them in the ground. I would sow them in pots, though. And go ahead and sow them in pots. You can probably sow them on the porch right now because it's so warm. The zinnias, you could wait a little while on. But zinnias, you know, zinnias don't like, a lot of zinnias don't like those midsummer, wet midsummer conditions. So it's just something you got to deal with and think about. They look better when they bloom in April, May, and June, and some of them will survive the midsummer. It's fun to. I need to get a record of the zinnias that have done really well for me, and I'm going to try to do that. But I think it's probably not too early to start some of your zinnias right now too, particularly the big flowered zinnias, the ones that are subject to powdery mildew. They need to be started earlier. If they're powdery mildew resistant, sometimes you can start them later and do just fine. So there it is. There's the thing to think about. So now, I gave you a chance to tell me what you wanted to talk about, and that's good. Now we're going to talk about the things we need to talk about. Let's talk about bananas for just a minute. Can we do that? Because the bananas have your bananas. If you did this right, you're going to have a great crop of bananas this year. There's just no question. I think this is going to be one of the best banana years we've had in a long while. Here's what will happen: if you won't get a good crop of bananas if you cut all your banana stumps back to the ground. If you cut it all back to the ground, You've already messed up. There's nothing you can do. You're not going to have good bananas this year. That's all there is to it, period. You have to have at least one or two stalks, trunks, if you will, of those bananas survive the winter. That's the way it works here. And if they're edible bananas, then you're going to produce. The likelihood is, in a winter like this one, in a spring like this one, you're going to produce edible bananas this year. But so you've got some stalks left. Let's talk about those stalks real quickly. If the tallest stalks often don't produce the best bananas, and that's because they went through a growth check during the winter. In most winters, that growth check means that the bananas, because the fruits are already forming inside the stalk at that point, and the fruit can be a little bit fibrous. This has been an extra warm winter, and maybe it won't matter. Maybe it won't matter as much this winter. But the truth is, I don't save the tallest stalk. I go for the sort of intermediate size stalks, and this year I'd say stalks that are maybe, the leaves may be a little higher, but if the stalk itself is about nose height or head height, forehead height, depending on how tall you are, that's about the right thing. So I'd say about a five foot tall stalk would be a good thing to go with. They're going to come out of their growth funk pretty quickly this spring, the way the temperature is going. Now, here's another thing to think about if you try to get really good bananas, because you want the stalk that's producing bananas to be growing fast and rapidly. You don't want to have any stress on it and to produce the best bananas. So you want to reduce the competition. So what we're going to do is we're going to find two. If the pad is big enough, maybe three, but really just two stalks that we're going to allow to grow. And we're going to cut everything else down. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to do. Because if you try to leave them all to grow, they're going to get stressed. And once again, the bananas are not going to be as good as the bananas that you would get if they weren't stressed. So find two stalks about 5 feet tall. Identify them, try to set them apart. You know, if it's good if they're pretty distant from each other on the pad so that they both have plenty of room to grow. Save two of those. Maybe you could do three if your pad is big enough. And in about a week or two, go ahead and cut the rest of those stalks down. If we're confident, about 2 weeks, 1st of March, cut the rest of those stalks down so that you've got just those two growing there. And then you'll want to put fertilizer on them. A lot of kinds of fertilizers work. I often take ashes from a fireplace. If anybody had it, if it got cold enough to burn a fire this year, if you've got any ashes from a fireplace, it's really great to put on there. If you don't have that, they're pretty, almost any fertilizer will work, but they do like a lot of potassium. They do like a lot of potash. And they like a fair amount of nitrogen. They could use some fertilizer. They also could use some leaves. I think we're going to have plenty of moisture, and we're going to be ready for some bananas. I predict June and July, people are going to be talking about, gosh, I got bananas already. That's the kind of year it's going to be. Hey, give us a call. If any of that don't make sense, you give us a call. Let's talk about it.
Sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played. Waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town, me and Lillian. Just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian. She loved her brother, I remember back when he was fixing up a 49 and in. He told her little sister gonna ride the wind up around the moon and back again. He never got farther than Vietnam. I was standing there with her when the telegram come, but Lily. Now he's lying somewhere about a million miles from Meridian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yes, sir. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. And, you know, it's the conditions seem right for planting outside. And, you know, they really probably are going to be ripe for planting outside. If your plants are big enough, you know, we went through this, and it's a real trick. How do you anticipate that the climate, you know, that the spring is going to occur 2 weeks or basically 2 weeks earlier than usual? And that's virtually what's happened this year. Usually I say spring starts on February 15th, February 20th on the Gulf Coast. Some folks got their heads way up in April. I can't help them. I've tried. I've just said, get your head out of Boston, folks. We're in Mobile. So spring isn't started in late April. It's starting in Mobile in February 15th or February 20th. But this year it started super early, super early. It's actually, I think, even earlier in as you move farther north. It's crazy. I've never seen anything like it. And for folks up north, I worry because I think the chances that there will be a frost that in North Alabama, I think it's a very good chance they'll have a frost. And I went through the Montgomery River bottomlands. Listen, folks, I've been going through the the Alabama River bottomlands at Montgomery. I've been going through those bottomlands for a long time. I scouted cotton there. I've seen those. One spring, I remember rounding up Dad's horses in those bottomlands during a spring flood. Gosh, what time of year was that? It was about February, March, and the floods had started. And I remembered I had to find the roads, and the only way I could find the roads was just the very tops of the fence post were visible above the water in the boat. When we were trying to find our way through all the fields in the bottomlands, I've seen those bottomlands. I have never in my life seen green this early in those bottomlands. And that, you know, that tender green of spring, it's already up there. This is February. Man, wow. It's incredible. It's not. I don't think it's disastrously early here on the Gulf Coast. I think we're going to be okay. I'm trying to figure out why we kind of have lucked out a little bit, so that we're not so disastrously early. I think that certainly the temperature has been warm and mild for a good long while, but we've had lots of rain and lots of mist. And that rain and mist has kept things from heating up excessively. I did I oiled my floors. I love it. I'll tell you about it sometime. It's a great way to do old-fashioned floors, and it really does beautifully. I use tung oil on it. And normally, that tung oil, I've done it before. It dries in, 2 weeks. Really hard. Not a problem. Man, it's been weeks. It won't dry because it's been so humid, because it's been so foggy, and because there's been so little heat. So I think that's helped us a little bit down here on the coast, is these mist of Mardi Gras. But it's warm enough now that azaleas are going to start blooming way early. Of course, the tulip trees, they're always kind of weird, but they're blooming. They're probably reached their peaks. If there are any dogwoods still alive, they'll be blooming here in a week or two. It's early. It's just flat early. So the question is, what do you do? What can you do early? We talked about the grass. I wouldn't fertilize the grass until you see the grass green up, because you're going to feed the weeds, because that fertilizer is released so quickly that the nitrogen is going to go to feed the weeds, which probably won't hurt anything except you'll be wasting your fertilizer. So put your fertilizer on when the grass greens up. That's when you put your fertilizer on. It hadn't greened up quite yet, has it? Not quite. It is a good time to mow the grass. It's a great time to mow the grass because the spring weeds are jumping. And those spring weeds, I'll just be honest, the spring weeds aren't going to hurt your grass. They never do. If there's a place where clover seems to have taken over, it's because there's no grass growing there. And there was no grass growing there anyway. And the clover is going to actually break that soil up and provide nitrogen and nutrients for the soil. It'll make the soil there better. Don't begrudge the clover. It'll be fine. But if it's bothering you, just mow it. Mow it. That's all you got to do. And it sets those spring weeds back. The St. Augustine will be on here pretty soon. Even the centipede will green up, and even centipede can compete with the summer wheat, with the spring weeds. That's not a problem. Week old centipede, and David, and then folks got bees. So David's decided he's got to have bees. So David's got to have bees. So he wants you to leave the clover alone so he can have honey for his bees. Though there's other better honey out there than the clover honey, David. I'll tell you. I've been thinking a lot about honey, thinking about how to take advantage of the various honey crops here. We kind of went over that a little bit. It's an interesting subject. So here it is. We got another spring coming on. It's time to begin thinking about what to do in your yard. Give us a call this morning if you've got any questions about what needs to happen. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. It's about the right time. Somebody sent me a message saying that they planted their tomatoes on February 6th and they're already a foot tall and blooming. I think this is wrong. I just tell me that that's wrong, because then I'd feel really bad, and I'd say, you need to take this show over, because I don't know how to do that. Maybe January 6th? That's about right. This year is one of those reasons why we stress getting things sown early, so that you'll be prepared. And as the climate warms, which it seems to be doing, we're going to have to sow earlier and earlier and earlier to take advantage, because the trouble is, as I've said with tomatoes and with a number of other plants, once we get those humid nights, once it gets so humid that the night temperatures don't drop below 75 degrees, most nights are for only minutes each night, and many nights the temperatures don't even drop below 80. Once we get to that point, a lot of plants struggle. They cannot take those high night temperatures. So what we're doing is, think about this, we're getting our window, we're hitting that window when the night temperatures are still in the upper 60s and lower 70s, and the days are relatively dry. That's April and May. So Charlie and I are talking about sunflowers. Why is it such a good time to do sunflowers? Because sunflowers really don't like, they get all gummy in midsummer. They don't like those hot nights. They don't like the humidity. They don't like the fact that it rains every day in July. All those things make for bad, soggy sunflowers. But David, if you go ahead and sow your sunflowers now, they're going to start producing their flower heads in April and May. They're going to think they're in Kansas, which Charlie tells me is the sunflower state. If you're from Kansas and Charlie doesn't know what he's talking about, you call us and tell us. But Charlie tells me that's the truth. It's the sunflowers. They're going to think they're in Kansas because the temperatures in April and May are very much like, and the weather is very much like temperature and weather in the middle of Kansas in summer. That's what we're shooting for. Hey, give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. So Charlie says, for the next 10 callers, I will mow your yard. That's a lie.
No, you said you would mow the yard.
Yeah. So I thought that was you were going to mow the yard.
No.
Neither one of us are going to mow your yard.
Anybody got any goats?
Yeah. I'm thinking about getting goats this year. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, now you don't have your roaming chicken pen anymore, do you?
Well, I do. And the trouble is I'm roaming, so it's harder for me to keep chickens take care of themselves better than almost any other pet. I love chickens. I would love to talk more about chickens. They take care of themselves really well.
Do they have automatic feeders for chickens?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, if you were going to be gone for a week,
You could do that. You don't need anything that sophisticated. You just fill up a chicken feeder, and usually it'll last for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
It's just that third or fourth day, you want somebody to be there to check for water and check for feed to make sure they're okay.
And your neighbors don't want to do it?
Well, we're gonna talk to them about that. We're gonna figure that one out.
I didn't mean to bring that up.
Yeah, we're gonna bring that up. And transporting chickens back and forth by car too frequently is a problem.
Well, I just love the idea of you moving that coop around to help fertilize your yard.
So it's really great. So here's the things I miss. Here's the things I really miss about having chickens. You have a portable chicken tractor. Some people put them in a stall or some kind of, chicken coop that's rigid.
Yeah.
And the trouble with that is all the poop goes in one place. All the dirt goes in one place. I mean, they're scratching around. And what good is that doing anybody?
That's right.
And then you got to go in and clean it out.
And it kills the grass in that one place.
And then there's all sorts of other problems. You got to clean it out and... Then the birds get more disease because they're all stuck in the same place and mm-hmm. the diseases build up. So, but you move them around, and you move them around about every 3 days.
So why haven't you patented this?
Well, I don't need to. I can't because, in fact, it's been done for a long time.
Oh, okay.
The chicken tractor concept is quite old. I have a design for a chicken tractor that I could patent.
So basically the coop is in a wire cage kind of a thing?
That's right. So it's I build a sled.
Yeah.
It's a sled. It's really cool. I just make it out of some treated wood.
Right.
So like rot, a, and it's a
like
sled.
A,
it's
like
just,
a tool shed.
Yeah. Well, it's a sled.
Yeah, well no, they come on sleds if you buy one ready built.
Yeah, yeah. So it's and you just slide it around on the grass. There're probably some ways to do it with wheels and I've thought about doing that, like getting some big lawnmower wheels and put on there and that would be kind of funny looking. And then it looks like a train. It's got the little compartment where like an old-fashioned train. Where the conductor sits, sits a little bit higher, and then you got that long nose, the long nose for the engine that runs in front of it, And the long nose for the engine is where the chicken run is. And then the part that sits a little bit higher is where they go and roost at night.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be – it don't need to be – it's not cold here, right? It's hot. So you want plenty of air circulation, and then I wrap it with rebar reinforcing wire.
Right.
To make the hoop for the front and the hoop for the back, and we build a little bit of wood, and it's easy. And then you put the chicken wire on top of that.
So how long do you leave it in one place?
It depends, but it depends on how many chickens you got in there and how big your thing is. But I would say about 3 days. You ought to move it after about 3 days.
And then you slide it over to another
area. Slide it over to another little area.
What an idea.
The advantage is, and it's not just the poop. That's nice. It's the fact that they're going to go through, if I've got, and this is almost as dirty a word as poop, if I've got cutworms coming up,
mm-hmm.
they're going to get in there, and they're going to eat those cutworms so the cutworms don't eat my plants. So they really can clean out the bugs in the soil. So it's a real nice thing. And then some days you just kind of let them have the afternoon out. So you'll just let them out of the pen, let them run around the yard, make sure they don't get into the carrots or other things and eat them up. But
can city residents still have up to 25 chickens in their yard?
Yes, and that's basically the law, as I understand it right now, still allows 25.
In the city of Mobile, whether
that's right, and it's
don't know about the history.
A lot of cities are doing this now. It's kind of funny that the traditional rural cities that still that don't want people to think they're rural,
mm-hmm.
they have really strict chicken laws because we don't think we're I don't want us to think we're living in the country. We're
That's
a
right.
big city.
We're sophisticated.
So we got chicken laws.
That's right. We're uptown.
Which, if you've got chicken laws, it shows what a small town you are. There it is. If you've got prevented, did I say that out loud? I did. So if your town prevents chickens, you're a small little town.
And you haven't mentioned the benefits of eggs.
The eggs are great, and the eggs are wonderful, and they're delicious, and they're absolutely wonderful. You know, you can't get good eggs from chicken feed. So now Charlie's got me all excited. We got all these people talking. We got chicken tractor questions now.
Good.
But listen.
It's a good
So
project.
You go to the grocery store. This is hilarious. And they said, our chickens are fed vegetarian.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, oh, my goodness. Folks don't understand a thing about
chicken.
What makes a good egg. You want a good egg, you are going to make sure that chicken eats an invertebrate. Do you know what an invertebrate is? It's an insect.
Right.
It's a bug. It's a – man, that makes for great chicken eggs.
And is there a role for the rooster in all of this?
Yes, well, roosters find their role. Roosters are hard to manage.
To muzzle them first.
They can be pretty brutal, and in a tight little pen like that, I wouldn't put a rooster in with a bunch of hens.
Okay, so fertilized eggs are not the
are not the thing unless you want babies.
Yeah.
And you might need babies at a certain point. There's a lot to be said. Mike, so now that we got stuck on this, on line one there. Mike, you got questions about chicken tractors? You got thoughts?
I've been thinking about getting chickens, and then just due to my yard and gas, the way the grass grows and everything, I found out about tractors, and that's going to be the only way I could do it.
Right.
I'm considering getting about 6 chickens. Is that I'm gonna be moving this thing by myself? Is that gonna be too big of a tractor to move by myself?
No, but you got to design it right. So don't put too much wood on it. One of the things that I did, and I have a sled, just because at a certain point the size of the sled gets to be a problem. I try to make the sled not too much wider than a garden row because I use them in the garden row. So that means the maximum width of my sled is going to be about 3 feet. Maybe a little more than 3 feet wide, not too much more, right? Because that's about the width of my garden bed. And the maximum length is somewhere around, it's 8 feet. because that's the size of the boards come in. So I use an 8-foot board for a sled. I could go with a 12-footer and cut it down and make it a little longer. So about 3x8. If you get it with a 3x8 pin, I would, if you're moving it around frequently, I would say that can hold four good laying chickens really easily, maybe even five. Six is getting a little crowded. It's possible, but I'd say that's a little crowded.
No, I'd want them to be happy.
Yeah. So now here's the trick. So get you about, you know, that's good for four or five chickens. Don't get if my recommendation is, don't get a big fluffy chicken because you're not eating them for meat. Probably at that scale. So get something like a leghorn, L-E-G-H-O-R-N, classic leghorn. You can get white leghorns, which are kind of flighty and dumb, or you can get the old-fashioned leghorns, which are colorful and beautiful, and they'll lay lots of eggs, and they're really good at taking care of themselves. And you could put five leghorns in a pen like that, and they'd be perfectly happy. So if you were to get, on the other hand, some buff Orpingtons, they're kind of big and fluffy and a little plump because they're used for meat, and they would feel kind of crowded if you put five of them in there.
Okay. One other question. The only downside I've read to tractors are it's a little bit more – it's easier for predators. Now, I live in a subdivision. I live in a neighborhood. There's not a lot of woods around me. So I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm not worried about fairly big predators, but is that another thing you need to be
wary of? Predators are clearly an issue, and the big predators are going to be raccoons. And the second big predators are going to be possums. And the third one are going to be dogs that people let loose. The dogs are dumb. They'll drive the chickens crazy, but it's easy to design a coop that prevents dogs. I designed a coop after dealing with raccoons that usually can defeat raccoons. If you really are really worried about it, you can actually use several types of wire that will keep the raccoons from pulling it off. They can figure it out. Now, here's the trick with predators. Predators don't like things that move. Raccoons, if you move that thing around, every 4 days, the raccoons are going to say, ooh, there's something weird going on with that thing. It moves every 4 days. I ain't going to mess with that. If you leave it in one place for a long time, the raccoons are going to say, And they're going to come start playing with it, and they'll play with it, and then they'll figure out some way to get in. So moving it is a great way to prevent predators. Dogs, you know, if you got a fence, it'll keep the dogs out. And usually it's some kind of wild dog or dogs people let out at night that cause the problems. Does that help, Mike?
Super cool, but guys, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Call back if you got any more questions. That's a fun one to talk about. And we're going to talk about them flower beds here in just a minute.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, so you start talking about chickens and people come out of the woodwork. It is good. It's good to hear from the Mobile Bay Area Backyard Chicken Club.
Wait a minute. There is such a thing?
There is. There is indeed.
Are they a Colonel Sanders affiliate?
They are. And listen, so we're going to figure out how to stay in touch with you guys, the Mobile Bay Area Backyard Chicken Club. We will.
That is awesome.
That's awesome. They do the training for the city permit. That's good to know. It was a problem back in the old days, I could tell you.
Wait a minute. Training for a permit?
That's right. So they train the officers who are actually giving the permits to make sure that chickens are kept humanely. So we can talk about that so that there's not a disease issue. And
so you have
and,
to have
and
a
so
permit.
That, and so if I get this correct – and we'll hear from them. So guys, we're going to do a segment on chickens. That is, I promise you, we're going to figure out how to get in touch. And we'll do that right after.
But
the show.
But do you have to have a permit from the city to have chickens? I know you're allowed to.
Technically, yes, I think you do.
Okay.
And
I don't know. Do we have chicken inspectors that come around to see?
They do, and if you have neighbors, that often is the case that neighbors will make sure that the chicken inspectors come by.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, you say, okay, I've got a permit. And if you don't get a permit, you run get one real quick.
And
there's a way. So we're going to talk about all the ins and outs of that. It's pretty easy. It's not hard to do. It sounds like we've gotten. Listen, folks, when I started this. Back in the old days, it was on the edge. I mean, people. It was kind of Mobile was still was trying to be a small city again. It didn't want to be a big city, so it decided, we got to do something about these chickens, man. People think we're from the country if we got chickens.
Chicken zoning.
Does that sound like the old Leghorn himself?
Did they have chickens in Mayberry? Do you think?
Sure, they did.
Okay.
Great questions. And thank you for holding on. Let's talk about your flower beds.
Okay. Right now I have roses and I can't make them grow. So I'm going to rip everything up and I'm going to go with something green. That's the only thing I know. Can you help me with what to plant other than cypress? I have no idea what I have in mind.
So your flower beds, what did you say you were trying to grow and it wasn't growing very well?
Roses,
yeah. Well, yeah, they're tough. Boy, they are tough. So is this bed close to your house?
Yes, sir. It buds up to my house.
Yep. So let me tell you, that first, and I'll just tell you frankly, the first 3 feet from your house is the worst place to grow anything. And the reason is, have you ever seen people build a house? Do you know what they do with all the stuff and the refuse and the food wrappers I hate to tell you what else they're dumping right there on the edge of that platform? That there's so many reasons why that first 3 feet. So my first recommendation is it's also going to have really poor drainage. So here's the trick. There's no law that says the bed has to be right slap up against the house. I know people think there's a law, but there's not a law. That's a good thing. So take your bed and move it out from the house about 2 feet, okay? So that the front of the bed is about 2 feet in front of where it is. That will leave you a 2-foot gap, which will make your termite man very happy because he hates for you to grow plants and put mulch right next to the house. You'll have a 2-foot gap there. That's fine. You can put pine straw there. It'll be fine. And put your plants out so that the center of each plant, let's say you put new shrubs, sits out about, it sits out about 3 feet from the house. Does that make sense?
Yes. It's not what I wanted to hear, but it makes good sense.
Yeah. I'm sorry. But you can do it, can't you? Can't you do it that way?
Well, there's in the front of the house, the living room is, there is a walkway that goes from the driveway to the front door.
The dreaded walkway.
Yeah, there's that, and I would have to pull everything up. And
so let's you don't want to have to reshape the driveway. So we may not get to all this today, but so you may have to call back. But let's talk about this real quickly. Is this on the south side of your house?
That with direction.
You're bad with directions.
The sunny side.
Which is it on the sunny side of your house?
Yes, sir.
Gets lots of sun, right?
It gets a good amount, yes, sir.
Okay. It helps. It'll really help to know which side of the house it's on. It'll also help to know, I think you need to add some pine bark to that soil. So it looks like we're going to be stuck using the beds we got. Let's raise the soil level just a little bit, and we're going to do it with pine bark. We're not going to use fake topsoil. Any topsoil you buy is fake, I promise you. We're going to do it with the stuff that makes topsoil, which is organic matter, and the best organic matter for starting beds is pine bark. So we're gonna put pine bark in your bed. We're going to raise that bed level just a little bit so that it's about 6 inches higher than what it is now. And once you do that, you can plant a whole lot of things in there. You can plant, if you're getting a little bit of shade, if you're getting some shade, you can plant some beautiful dwarf azaleas there. They'll be fine. Don't plant the big ones because if you ain't got much space, you're not going to have room for them. But you can plant some of the dwarf azaleas. They'll do beautifully. You can plant rosemaries if it's getting sun all day long. You can plant rosemaries, and you could even plant some kumquats. Rosemaries and kumquats would be really pretty there. If you can imagine that, it'd be really fun. You know what I'm talking about with kumquats?
Yes, sir.
So it would, and they'll make a little shrub, and you can make a little ball at the top. If with the kumquats, it's just really beautiful. So that'd be one way to do it. You can plant all sorts of wildflowers and all sorts of flowers, all sorts of flowering plants. Though I think you'll want some evergreens. So, you know, you kind of go with the rosemary on the one side if it's really dry and sunny. And on the other side, you might go with azaleas or hydrangeas, which would fit in that space if you're getting a little bit of shade. So what you need to do next week is figure out which direction this bed is facing. You got a homework assignment. Which bed is this? Which way is this bed facing? Which direction? The second thing you got to do is send me a picture of these beds. And you can just send the picture to this phone number. That's all you got to do. Take a picture with your phone. Send it to this phone number. Send it next Sunday morning. And then the third thing you got to do is you got to figure out what kind of plants you like. And we're going to design that bed so that it works really well.
Yes, sir. How long will I need to let the pine bark stay?
We're going to plant right in the pine bark.
Yes, sir.
So we got to take a break. This is the end of the show. But next week we're going to be back. And can you do it for me next week? Can you do this homework assignment?
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, I'm fixing to go. I'll go outside and do it right now.
All right. It sounds fun. We're going to have a good time next week. All right.
Thank you for your help.